would move that a letter of amendment to be led by the minister. As, and each of the team, our staff today, thank you very much for being in attendance. I can see your honor of the mainland. The only one who has responded to the call. We will try next time to do the same. But when we first saw honorable members, any apologies were
good morning, members and our guests. I've got apologies from Mr. Tenjani. He's done late in the church. Thank you.
Okay. Let's welcome also. Yes, Mahuma Saule.
Thanks, Chair. I thought that there's a pending apology of Comrade von Marantz, or Honorable von Marantz, as he is being checked by the doctor from time to time.
Okay. You will be noted until you are told otherwise. Welcome, Honorable Sonyana, to this committee. We will manage the many confusion from this side. We just have to deal with the formalities. I'm told she is the member and now responsible in this committee. But until it's done formally, because the risk would be, which I hope it won't be the case, would be if we can reach a stage when we have to vote. Now, if it's not on the record that you are a member of this committee, it might disadvantage you. But at this stage, you are not there. But welcome to the committee. I'm sure you'll find it very fruitful. It's a very robust committee. Nothing is left beneath those tables. Everything is above board. But always done with ultimate respect for each member. Because we are here as responsible South Africans that are privileged. That's a privilege that out of the 57 million, we are one of the few that and we are also privileged that we are the 11 identified team that is supposed to do the work on mineral resources and energy. So we look forward to those contributions that will help and enhance our work. Without any further ado, before I go to what is supposed to be the business of the day, I just received what we call it, and I still send to the Library of Parliament. AGC referral on Areco. Yes. Oh, no, no, no. I had a thing, but I can't read Afrikaans. I was with us when I read in Afrikaans, but they have calls. We received a draft bill which is called private members bill, from Mrs. Mazzoni, on what is called type independent electricity management operators bill. Now, reliable guided that we have to invite her sooner, and depending on her availability to come and present that proposed bill, and then from there we will then decide as a committee on how to then develop the way forward to do it. But the first stop or the first line is to invite her to the committee, and probably by next week, which then means it will form or fall on the legislative framework and it becomes part of an additional work. When we deal with it, I'm told that is the procedure, and I think we will do so. And if it's available next week, we'll have to look on one of the 2 days that they mentioned, Tuesday or Wednesday. Welcome, Honorable Philip. So, having said so, we have invited the department. One of the things when I came here was that as soon as I was announced as the chairperson, besides most of the many good things that happened, the RAND appreciated immediately. And the petrol price, fuel price came down. So I didn't want that time to make an issue, because a few months down the line, fuel price went up. It was not because of me, probably, it was another reason. But now, at that time, we could have decided to make it a deal with the issue as an emotional matter. So when it went down, and I was asking, do we know when does it go up and when does it go down, and who's the driver? All of us sitting here were told that our lives are controlled by God. I don't want to believe that this person is another God on earth who decides to go today, let me first use party to take it up, and then tomorrow I will put it down. Welcome, woman. So with that, we must invite the department to at least the committee, and we start to interact with some of the serious issues. But I must say also, Honorable Member, I should have said this with all due respect, we had expected that tomorrow we will be having a joint committee with public enterprise. Unfortunately, the lead department was public enterprise, and we informed that they have postponed the meeting. And we didn't have anything that would sleep and wake up and say, let's put something back, because that would have been a serious show of notice to anyone. So tomorrow we don't have any committee meeting, not because we like to, but because of the time constraint. So as we said, so at least now we are sure this briefing will be at a less emotive level, because the petrol price has gone down, fuel price has gone down, so we'll be discussing under a very convenient environment. I saw some last year people talking about the fuel price, and people can now talk out of noise. So without any further ado, let me give to the department, Honorable Minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
must first of all confess that I'm still a student. Vancouver and his team put me through various classes, and I try to understand. It's still very complex for me. So as I come here, I'll be learning in this process as well. That's why I will give a chance to them to explain the technique. The reason for that is the price of fuel is a moving target, which is influenced by a number of factors. One is the level of international crude oil price. When you open the TV in the morning and you see crude oil price is $60 per barrel, and next time you open it says $90 per barrel, that impacts on the price of fuel. The second one is the level of international refined petroleum products. The third one is the level of rand dollar exchange rate. Again, when you open in the morning, they say rand is 15 rand 30 cents to a dollar, and it becomes stronger when you release the RP. It goes to 14 rand 74 cents. That impacts on the price of oil. That's why when those developments move in our favor, the price of crude oil declines. When they move against our favor, the price of crude oil works against us. The other factor is the geopolitics. When the U.S. and China are at each other's throat, they impact on the crude oil price and impact on the price of fuel. So the biggest negative factor on our price is that we import about 80% of our crude oil. The only thing we don't import is 20% from coal to fuel, put on by Sasol. That's all. The rest was important. At this point in time, we're having hope that we will make discoveries of oil and gas. At this point in time, they're not at any. We're still hoping, even if there's hope, it is a function of our being optimistic. An announcement is made that Total has made the discovery and from Pata. We'll keep our fingers crossed that could be substantial. When he and I are dealing with the KZN coast, hoping that they will make a discovery. All of them get resisted at town. The environment is going to be spoiled. So my own view is that our effort to strengthen CEF and the subsidiaries talk to this matter, because a well-coordinated CEF is a reliable agent. Given that the prioritized appointment of boards, we're now looking at appointing CEOs in a space where there are no CEOs in many of those subsidiaries for a long time, created instability. So every work we do there is an attempt to stabilize the system. But what I'm going to do, I've asked Boma Kubel, so is there any other method? Because this method has just been doing difficult to understand. And I would imagine, even difficult for me to understand, when a person in the street there is going to be very complex, but so all they deal with are the consequences. It is going up, it's going down, it's going up, 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 up. then down, down, and then up. That is all the meaning of the spirit. There's no other method. And you explain the different approaches to purification. It was mainly common in the street, something called free on value, fright, every 5 days access insurance, ocean loss, demurrage, cargo use, coastal storage, stock financing costs. And every time I listen to this, I say, but all these things, at the end of the day, it is the end consumer who pays. What is it that we should do differently? And I'm living that. To do that, to give the technical explanation, any attempt on my part to do that, I mean, I'm very messed in that.
Cool. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. Also, morning to the committee members. DG and colleagues. As Minister has indicated, we are going to attempt to unpack the DSP this morning. What we attempted when we were putting this together to say we should put together a narrative. And the approach that we adopted is that let's first come and explain, and then the narrative we will send to the committee secretariat, because it's a lot of reading. But what we will do today is really unpack everything slowly to make sure that we are able to indicate how we get here. And I also want to say that the origins of the DSP and the reason why we have a DSP in this country is that we wanted to sustain a competitive refining sector. Without a DSP, we doubt that we would have a competitive refining sector. And if you don't have a refining sector in the country, then it means you have to import everything apart from petrol, diesel, and jet fuel. You then have to import even all the other byproducts of the refining of crude oil. So effectively, this method of calculating our fuel price sustains industrialization in the country. That is quite important. Without it, as I said, we doubt that we even have the refining capacity in the country. But I also need to point out that internationally, the BFP pricing methodology is well respected. It's quoted in many studies that are done on benchmarks on how to price petroleum products in a regulated market. We received quite a number of delegations from a number of countries to basically take them through the BFT process. A number of countries experience shortages precisely because they don't have a predictable pricing framework. So with the permission of the chair, Mr. Maike, who is our pricing specialist, will take us through the, you know, the basics as to what they do on a daily basis in terms of calculating the daily under and over recovery, and what are all these things that are in the formula, what do they mean, and what is the plan going forward. I just need to indicate that the minister has asked that we look at have challenged us to look at ways of revising the existing formula. I can indicate that that work has started, and we have interacted with stakeholders, and I think at the time that we conclude that work, I believe that the necessary announcements would then be made by the ministry. But again, we want to caution that the only sustainable way of making sure that energy prices are manageable is to also balance what we import with what we produce from the ground. So we are encouraged with what Minister has indicated, all the exploration work that is taking place on our shores, because it will have the impact of balancing the shocks and absorbing all the shocks from the international impact on the price. So, Chair, with your permission, Mr. Mackay can go through. And as I indicated, we will make another trip in terms also available.
Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Honorable Minister, thank you for the opportunity to present to this committee and the engineering duty. Thank you all. I'm going to present on the daily fuel price and what happened on the adjusted fuel price on monthly basis. So, in terms of the content of the presentation, this is how I structured it. Give a bit of introduction, then highlight some of the key policy positions that we use, the pricing mechanisms, then I talk about the basic fuel price itself. In South Africa, we call it basic fuel price, but in actual fact, it's the import parity pricing. In most countries, they use it as import parity pricing. Then I talk about the MIGP, maximum national gate price for LPG gas. I talk about the single maximum national retail price for paraffin. Just briefly, I think I've got two slides on each. And then maybe touch on the regulatory accounting system that we use to calculate the industry margin. Then I can conclude with the frequently asked questions. I think I've got about five or six of them we can respond to. In terms of the pricing of petroleum products globally, there are actually three basic formulas that can be used. In any country that you go, either they are using one of the three. They cannot use anything outside the three. The first one is called ad hoc pricing, where the prices are set irregularly and there's no transparency. It's mostly common in countries where they've got their own oil, then they can subsidize the pump price from the revenue when they sell the oil. In Nigeria, they used to subsidize heavily, and when they try to cut by 50%, there was almost a problem and so on. But this can happen, right? In our neighboring country, for example, in Botswana, before the election, they did not adjust the pricing for this first month. So there's no transparency, it's irregular and so forth. Then the second one is the formula-based or automatic pricing adjustment, which is the one that is more transparent, is the one that we are using in South Africa. It's very transparent, the prices are published, everything is in the website. That is why in South Africa we have 8 days that we go and announce the prices before the government even announces, because everything is in the website and in the transparent. And then we have the one where the prices are not regulated, the last one where the prices are liberalized, which means the market controls the prices. This happens in countries where the market players, there are many of them, they can compete equally, and therefore they can compete on pricing. So in other words, you need a very saturated market, in which case South Africa is not, because they have about 6-7 big players, and the new entrants are actually buying from them. So if you buy from me, you cannot compete with me on price. So that's one of the reasons why it's not easy to deregulate the pricing at the moment, because the players cannot compete equally to be able to compete on price. So it happens, for example, in Australia, where it's deregulated. However, the government, through the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, on regular basis, they go and check all the elements that are used on pricing, particularly the international element that the minister was talking about, the freight, the FOB and so on, they will go and check to make sure that the market is actually aligned to those international prices so that they don't overprice the petroleum products. So they act like a watchdog, if you like. In South Africa, petrol is regulated at retail level. We know the pump price of petrol is regulated. And it depends on the zone where it is, because there are about 64 or 5 zones. And these zones are determined based on the distance from the supply port. If you bring product from Durban to Johannesburg by pipeline, Johannesburg is in different zone 90, and then you take it to Kimberley and so on. And it also depends on the mode of transport that is used to take that product to where it's required. Diesel is not regulated, both at the pump price and at the wholesale level. What we do is we publish the reference price, you know, that the market can use. So, but it's not a regulated price by the department. Illuminating paraffin, we have a single maximum national retail price. So a liter of paraffin, ideally according to our formula, should cost the same price wherever you are in the country. So we have actually averaged the transportation cost of the whole country and say wherever I should pay the same price for a liter of paraffin. However, there are challenges with middlemen and so on, and they end up not necessarily setting at the regulating price. LPG price, we started regulating it in 2010. We have the maximum maximum refinery price, which is the price where you buy LPG when it's moved from the refinery, from the refinery gate. And then you have the maximum retail price of LPG. The challenge is with the maximum refinery gate price, because it's a local component, and most of the players in the LPG industry are saying to us they're importing LPG when there's a shortage in the country. And when they import LPG, they're actually paying a price that is higher than the maximum refinery gate price. When we arrived at the maximum refinery gate price at the time, South Africa was producing a lot of LPG and we actually been exporting LPG. So it makes sense at the time to use the refinery gate price as our reference price. But now it's no longer the case. And I'm sure the DG will also talk today. We just diverted the regulation where we are going to now move from the maximum refinery gate price to the import price for LPG. I think it's still out for comment for 60 days, but we can talk to them during question time. I did indicate to you that we are using the import parity price in principle. Now, what it means, and the minister also alluded to me, our pricing formula in South Africa, it assumes that everything that is sold in the country comes from the international market. And DDG said the idea was to protect our refining sector. Now, we have four crude oil refineries, and we have gas, and it's called to liquid refinery and gas to liquidify. So we have in total six refineries that produce petroleum products in the country, and they produce around 80% of our demand. However, we still import crude oil from the four crude oil refineries, which is also dollar denominated. That's one of the things that we must also take into consideration. So our pricing formula is a big pricing formula, because we assume that everything you sell is imported, though we know that there are these four refineries or six refineries that are producing products. But one of the other things is, if we say, for example, we did not do that, and we sell at whatever price is local price, and then one or two refineries go and shut down, then you have to go to the international market to get petroleum product at a much higher price that will actually cause instability in the market. So the import parity price went to, in sort of way, to smoothen the prices, if you like. And then I've alluded to the fact that we have zonal pricing. We have about 54 zones. That's why you go to different towns. The liter of petrol is different because of the distance of bringing the product to that particular place from the point where it's coming from. And then we have the different transport modes. You can use a pipeline for a million of liters. You can use rail. You can also use transport trucks. Now, the cheapest is obviously pipeline, because you can bring in 20 million liters of land at once from Durban to inland market. Then it's followed by rail, because we've got lots of rail tenders. You can take jet fuel to our terminal airport using those tenders. Trucks are the most expensive in terms of delivery fuel. So you may find in some areas to take fuel there, you might have to use all three modes of transport. if you take some places in the Northern Cape, for example, the product will come from there, then by rail to Gauteng, I mean by pipeline, then from Gauteng it might, by rail it might go to Kimberley, from Kimberley by truck go to Eastern Fire. So in some cases we might use all three of them. And when we do pricing for that particular zone, we take into consideration all the different modes of transport that are being used to do that. But we also have a 15-year, because the price is regulated, minister and chairperson. When you introduce anything, you hear the industry, they want to recover that. Say, for example, clean fuels too. The industry say they need to recover that money that they're going to use to invest in clean fuels too. Anything that you want to introduce, either it's going to be passed on to the consumer, because that's the only way that it can be paid for. That's why we have a cost recovery mechanism. In terms of the mandate, where our mandate comes from, these are some of the regulations and the policies that we have. Of course, the main one is the Energy White Paper. We have the Petroleum Products Act. The Central Energy Fund is very important for us in the department because of the establishment of SEF. And then we have the Petroleum Pipelines and the others that are also the National Energy Regulator and Establishment and so forth. In terms of why we say this BSP, what is BSP? For us, the BSP is the price that you will pay when you want to buy fuel, right, in the international market. Say you buy it from Singapore, you buy it from the Mediterranean, you buy it from the Arab Gulf, where they've got big centers, refining centers, you buy fuel and you want to bring it to South Africa. The cost associated with that, first the purchase price, then the transportation cost, until it lands in our harbors, in Devon, wherever. That's we call that the basic fuel price. So this is in the main what changes on monthly basis, because you have your rail dollar exchange rate there, you also have the price of crude oil. So these are the key factors that changes our price on monthly basis, but I'll explain as we go on. The Central Energy Fund was appointed by Cabinet in 1994 to be the one that operates our pricing model on behalf of the department. At the time, there was no capacity in the department and so on. So that's where most of the pricing and everything is done by Central Energy Fund. And then we then go there at the end of the month together with external auditors to check the prices before the minister can approve and again announce. Now, in terms of the pricing that we work on, there's what is called the working group, the BSP working group. It outlines in detail what should be done step by step until we arrive at the final calculation at the end of the day. So even the auditors, it's like our bi-annual pricing. Even the auditors use that the working group to audit our prices before they can be announced. Right, I talk about independent auditors. So I just indicated some of the things from the working rules. What the working rules also say, Minister, is that the new prices will kick in on Wednesday, the first Wednesday of every month. It's in the working rules. So which means then the announcement should be made before the new prices come in, because the industry, particularly the retailers, they need to then adjust their pumps to the new price at 12 midnight on the Tuesday before the price changes. So it's very important that we do that. We prefer normally to do it on the Tuesday, because we need to gazette the new prices, Minister, on Tuesday. Normally they say before 2 o'clock we must gazette them. If they're not gazetted, they cannot be implemented, because these are regulations. And then the issue around over and under cover, because we can also talk about it as we go on. Our prices in South Africa are adjusted at the beginning of the month. We fix the price at the beginning of the month. Then you go and fill up your car and so on. However, the oil companies go to the market to buy this fuel. They can buy it at the price that is the same as the one we fixed, depending on the international factors, or they could be buying at a price that is higher than what we fixed at the beginning of the month, or even lower for that matter. Now, let's take petrol for example. We say at the beginning of the month, we say the base fuel price for petrol, we say 600 for any metric. We say for this month, we fix BSP based on the figure for last month and the month before, BSP is 600 at the beginning of the month. Then the oil companies go to the market and they buy petrol and so on. On average, we find that BSP is now 610 on average. So it means the oil companies were paying more than their recovery, which means now they are under recovery because they are paying more than what they are getting from the price. So the opposite is true. If the Boston market in the BSP is less than 600, say 508 and so on, it means the oil companies are over recovered because they are getting more than what they actually paying less than what is fixed in the price. So they are actually over recovered. That's why the concept of over or under recovered comes in. But you know, we're only able to do that because we're comparing the current month and the previous month. Then we can see the difference in terms of the average. Then we know whether there's over or under recovered. In terms of the demand that are important, Minister, in prices, April is very important. Why is April very important? April is important because that's the time we adjust the transport cost. They're adjusted once every year in April. So NERSA will give us the pipeline tariff. Remember, Transnet will apply, they go through the process. Once NERSA has approved the tariff, they'll give us those tariffs and include them in prices. The same thing applies with the Road Freight Association. The cost of delivering fuel by trucks and so on, we get that from them, the close of the previous month. Then we can then be able to adjust the transport. And this is a once-off adjustment every year in April. In September, which did not happen this year, because there's no agreement, we normally adjust the wages for the petrol attendants because their salary comes from the price of fuel. So because there's no agreement between the employees and the employer under the motor industry bargaining council, we could not get a percentage to adjust, we are still waiting. So unfortunately, that's the issue from our side. Then December, Minister, we adjust all the industry margins. That is your retail margin, your wholesale margin, your secondary storage, and your secondary transport margin. So they are adjusted every year in December. It's one of adjustment. Then we do what most people were surprised, but this is what also is in the working group, the quarterly octane adjustment. In our pricing formula on monthly basis, we are using 95 octane. That's a lead product. So that's the price that we check on monthly basis. But we know that we have 95 and 93 in the country. So what happens is, that's why in 2 months you'll see that the changes for 93 and 95 will probably mostly be the same. Because we're using 95 as a lead product. But then every quarter, we do what is known as quarterly adjustment for the different grades. That's why sometimes we find it used to be 2 cents sometimes. Recently, the margin has increased because of the two products and the demand and supply in the market. That's why sometimes people don't miss that call to say, why is 93 was supposed to go down by so much, but it's going up by a different amount? Because they don't know about the in terms of the import price, the minister talked about this, so I'll try to explain each one of them. The free on board, the freight, the insurance, and so on. These are all the costs associated with bringing a vessel of petrol or diesel to South Africa. These are the costs that you must cover. They will also show you that there is sense pay in that choice. Right. The first one, which is the free on board. This is the price that you pay, say, for a barrel or for, let's say, just for a liter of petrol in the international market. Now, they call it free on board because when you pay for it, you only take ownership of the product once it's loaded on a vessel. So you are ready to transport it. So everything else that is, whether it's connected by pipe, whatever, whatever they use to get it onto the vessel, that cost is covered by the owner of the product. You only take ownership once the product is on board, so it's already on the vessel, then it becomes your product. So that's the price that you pay for that bit. And then the freight, this is the shipping cost, right? The people who are owning this vessel that transport the product, you pay them the amount of money per liter or whatever per ton to bring your product to everyone. They look at the distance and so on. These prices are published by the London Stock Brokers Panel. These are a group of guys who own this vessel. They sit down and agree at the beginning of the year. Then they publish a book with all the rates for the different distances. Then we have insurance. Everything that you transport, the vessel itself needs the insurance, and the product itself also is insured. Then we have ocean loss, because we're dealing with chemical products that evaporate. obviously there's some loss along the way when you deliver the product. So you also pay for the ocean loss in the evaporation. Then demurrage. This is in addition to the contract that you have with the vessel owner. When you contract a vessel to bring product to South Africa, you also agree on the amount of days that it will take to offload that vessel when it gets to Durban, for example. So once you have that contract, we are saying as a department, in addition to that, we also give you additional 3 days as part of the pricing formula, because we know there could be challenges that they happen before you can offload your product and so on. So that is kicked up. What it means is, from pricing, you can only recover for 3 days. If your vessel takes more than 3 days outside your contractual agreement, it means now those other costs you kept them yourself, and they can be very, very costly. And then you have a cargo dues. This is the cost for using the facilities at the port. It's determined by the National Port Authority. So every year they give us a figure, then they put it in the pricing formula. Then you have coastal stock storage and coastal stock financing. Because we are saying we import all the products, it means when the vessel arrives, the product must go to a storage facility, because it can't go straight to the market. Remember, bringing million liters of product. So if really it goes to the storage facility, from the storage facility, then it goes to the market. However, in our pricing formula, we said the oil industry should be keeping the stock for 26 days, 25 days. In coastal storage. And one of the ideas was that when you have shortages and so on, you can then also draw from that particular store. But we know for a fact that they prefer to have their product in the market than keep it in the tank. So they don't keep it for 25 days. Then free on board, in terms of the market where you get the product from, for South Africa, in terms of what is relevant to us, is the Mediterranean, which is in Italy, is one of the centers for refined products. You have Singapore, where they also have big tanks and refining centers, then in the Arab Gulf. Those are the main centers where we get our products from. There's also the European market, but it's a bit far from us. It costs us more in terms of shipping if we bring products from there. So we are saying petrol 50% currently come from the Med, 50% will come from Singapore. And then diesel 50% from Med and 50% from Arab Gulf. And in terms of IP, 50% from the Med, 50% from Singapore. What the DDG has said, this is one of the things that under review, we see these percentages are going to change. Because the BFQ was developed in 2003, 2004. And this movement of product in the market has actually changed also. So you see when we review that, this will have changed. This is just a map to show you where the Mediterranean is, where the Arab Gulf is, and then where the Singapore is, and they bring product all the way to Devon. So you can see the map is a bit far from us and so on, but we then have the pricing plus, which is the pricing agency that we use, and it's using pricing to give us all the prices. This one is just to maybe indicate in your pricing formula, you see that we have 15% premium. We have freight, which is published by the International Pricing Agency. Then next week they say plus 15% premium. So this is one of the things that is also under review, because the premium, when we ask the oil industry and everybody else, they are giving us different explanations. But in the heart of it, the premium was paid during the tax day in South Africa, where most owners of these vessels did not want to bring products to South Africa. Because of the embargo and so on. So for them to take a risk, they were charging additional 15%. So you see that during the review, we are proposing that we might have to take it out. Then I spoke about demurrage, and I don't want to repeat myself, Chairperson. This slide just to summarize, to show that all the elements that I was talking about, they're actually in cents per liter. You know, we have conversion, international conversion factors, we have converted from US cents and so on, US cents per ton to South African cents per liter. So all of them you can see they are costing cents per liter. The minister touched on some of these factors that influence particularly the import price, the international crude oil prices. That's very, very critical for us. We track it on daily basis. Some of you will recall that when there was on the Saudi Arabia oil fields, the oil processing facilities, the actual oil price actually down by almost 20%. But 2 days later it went down. So they then did an assessment, they realized that it won't impact on supply. But this is really what happened. You know, anything happens to those major suppliers of oil, and the market sentiment is that it's going to create a shortage of funding, then the price of crude oil might be trying to come. But what now the Saudis and other people in the Arab South have done is that they are no longer relying on the vessels to take products from from the Arab Gulf to other countries. They also have a pipeline, you know, that comes from the Arab Gulf to other European countries. But Saudi Arabia in particular, they also have a lot of storage facilities in China and in other countries. So even if they might have a problem of supplying from their own country, they can still be able to supply and meet their market obligations by taking products from the other storage facilities where they store the product. International product supply-demand balance is also very critical. South Africa is a very small market when it comes to petroleum products. We are probably 1 to 1.2% of the global market. So we do not control the price. We are actually a price taker, let's put it that way. Whatever the market decides is the price, we take the price. So it's very critical that countries like China, which are big consumers, countries like USA and so on, those are big consumers. Whatever happens in those countries, if they demand more product, it means some of us might not get it, or there'll be shortage in the market, that can shift the price down. And then we have the product industry level. Some countries like USA, China, and so on, they are building very good facilities where they, in fact, they have the storage facilities where they store their own products. So when crude oil is cheaper, they can always buy crude oil and put it in the storage tank. And when the price of crude oil goes to a certain level that they think will affect their consumers, they actually then draw from the storage tank and then minimize the price for their own consumers, right? That's how they use the storage facilities. But now, the problem for us is when they draw from those facilities become empty. And the market knows those facilities are almost empty. Now, when they have to refill those facilities, then they take more crude oil from the market, they create an artificial shortage, if you like. That also pushes the price up. So it can also work for us or work against us. Then you have geopolitics. The DDG also talked about it. You know, 55% of crude oil is in the Middle East. And the Middle East is not the most stable area in the world, we know that. So all these countries, they supply the market with crude oil, and they've got their own quotas that they supply. So if one of the countries is taking out, for example, if Iran, because of sanctions and so on, they can no longer supply the international market, it means these other members have to make sure that they take over the whatever Iran wants supply. So sometimes it's doable. Sometimes the country that is, for example, if Saudi Arabia can have a problem, because Saudi Arabia is one of the biggest suppliers. 25% of crude oil is in Saudi Arabia. So if anything happens and they cannot supply the market, that could create a huge shortage of crude oil, and the price can actually easily go up. So geopolitics for us is very critical because of where the crude oil resources are located. And also what happens in China, USA, and so on, it affects also the supply and also the exchange rate. We talked about the exchange rate. Obviously, everything we buy, whether it's finished product, crude oil, is bought in dollars. So the exchange rate becomes critical for us. The minister, did you talk about the international refining margin, which is also very important. Because these refiners, they want to make sure that when they refine product, they also get a particular margin for that product. So that is also included in the price. So if the refining margin internationally goes up, it also pushes the price of finished product that we import. The issue of weather patterns is also affecting us. It depends on how long is the winter season in the northern hemisphere. Sometimes it takes 4 months, sometimes it can be very severe, and you find that the snow and so on. So there is no documented incident, your gas, your diesel-related products for space heating. That either will create a shortage for diesel in the market, and the price of diesel will shoot up. So this is what happens mostly around December, January, when it's winter and not in the industry. What I've just finished now, Chairperson, those are all the international factors that affect our price. And among those international factors, the one that changes on a regular basis is the exchange rate and the crude oil price. And that will then inform the price of finished product. So that's why our price changes on a monthly basis, based on those international factors. The ones that I'm going to touch on now, these are local factors within South Africa's control. And this one changes once every year. So this one don't change regularly. You have the product, the petroleum product levy. We talked about the NERSA tariff. This is where now the oil company that use the pipeline, they invoice Transnet. Then they must pay for using the pipeline. Then they pay Transnet, they get invoice, then they supply to the department that invoice, then they recover their money. Right, then the volume must be confirmed by NERSA. And part of the money also is used for the operations of NERSA, particularly on the pipeline in the gas side. So then NERSA will submit their plan for the year, will provide the everything else, and if approved by the department, then that portion of the money will be included in this levy to manage the affairs of NERSA. The IP tracer by name, this is only imposed on diesel. And the reason we have this dye is mainly because people can mix paraffin and diesel 50-50 and use it in your car without any problem. But we all know that paraffin does not have levies, there's no tax on paraffin and so on. So it means if people do that, they try to avoid paying taxes, which is a huge problem for them. Now, this tracer dye levy, the oil companies, they are all expected to buy this dye. And then they put it in their IP, so that if there's any mixing with diesel, it changes color. So the inspectors from France and so on, they can at any given time stop the truck and check the product and so on. And if it changes color, then they know there's a mixture between diesel and IP. Then according to France's legislation, how to deal with those kind of things. Then we have the slave lady. At the moment, the slag levy, they will show you the composition of the fuel price. The slag levy is there to deal with, we talked about cumulative, we talked about over-recover or under-recover. So there are cases where the fuel price will go up was it last year, where it went up for almost 6-7 months, it even prompted the minister we even froze the price in September last year, because it was just going up every month. Now, the slag levy is now used to cushion, particularly the oil company, when the cumulative under recover is then used to close that gap for the oil industry. That's the money that was also used to pay for that the freezing of fuel prices at the time, because there was some money in the slag account. So this slag levy is administered by Central Energy Fund. According to the rules that we have, we are saying if the money that account, because it changes every time, depending on the BSP and so on, for all the oil companies, depending on their percentage, market share, and so on. Now, when the money, the total amount in this late account exceeds minus 250 million, so which is below, it goes to below minus 250 million, then the late levy kicks in. But there's also a formula to say by how much and so on. So now the reason why we don't have a slag levy in our private company is because the money in the account is still above the 250 million threshold. So every month we look at the balance and we'll then be able to know whether there should be a levy or not and so on. And then this slide shows you the levies that are, particularly the first three, that are determined by the Minister of Finance. The fuel levy is the prerogative of the Minister of Finance. In February during budget vote speech, he'll make an announcement whether the fuel levy should go up or down. Then the Department of Energy Minister will just implement. The same thing with the custom and excise levy. This is the money that you pay when the product, whatever the brings South Africa from the product and so on, you also pay. Then the Road Expense Fund, again, Minister of Finance will tell us whether it should go down or up when it makes budget or fees in there. But it's used to compensate for people who are involved in motor accidents. There's the demand side management gate. This is only imposed in the inland market. You'll find the Cape Town is not there. in the coastal area. The reason it was introduced at the time, in 2006 or so, it was to discourage people from using 95 octane, because it's only imposed on UMP 95. The idea was to say, there was an octane study that was done, and it was found that it's just a waste of octane. People are wasting octane when they use 95 instead of 93. So the name itself was meant to discourage people from using 95, even when they can use 93 with no problem in their car, particularly in the inland market, because of the altitude. So what the octane does, in simple terms, it actually, some would say, gives your car the kick, you know, when you move from a position of standstill. If you look at the car for motor racing, the octane there is around 133, 135 or so. So we can see when the car moves from a position of standstill, the speed at which it moves is because of the higher octane. So for 93 and 95, the difference is really two. And in the inland market, you don't see, it doesn't benefit consumers to use 95 instead of 93. But we know that some of the car manufacturers now, they actually force you to use 95. Chairperson, if you allow me, I'll spend a bit of time on this slide because this is very important. This is what you see as a pump price. But I'll try to focus on all the products. If you look at the illuminating paraffin on your far right, you can see that from here, everything is 0-0 because these are all your local sectors, your fuel levy, your road instant fund, your slave levy, and so on. Paraffin does not have all those taxes because it's used by the poor. That's what we said that was taken by government. But now if you look at the 95 octane, the first one, you'll see the wholesale margin is 34. This is the profit margin for the industry, the producers of petroleum products, the owners of the molecules. Then you have secondary storage, which is where the product is stored at the depot before it goes to the market. And then you have secondary distribution. This is for the guys who are owning the trucks who are delivering the fuel. And then you have the retail margin for the guys operating the retail business. This retail margin is actually divided into two. There's the OPEX, operational expenses, and the CAPEX, the capital expense. So in most cases in South Africa, most of the service stations are owned by the mega oil companies. That's why you see their names there. So that OPEX will be invested by the oil company. It's about 50-60 cents of this amount. Then you have your operational expenses, which then include the salary for port attendants, include their membership fee, their uniform, and everything else that has to do with the operation of the service station, whether it's the CCTV camera, whether it's the standby generator, and so on. All those are included in the retail margin. Then this service differential is a transport cost. This is only for Gauteng. So other parts of the world will be different. It will only be 57. It will be more. Then there's a fuel levy, which is 361. The road expense fund, 198. So if you add the two, it's more than 5 grand. Now, some people will ask, why countries like Botswana, Swaziland, they buy fuel from us, but they are just cheaper than ours? It's mainly because they don't have fuel levy of 361. They don't have the road expense fund of 198. Remember, when they buy from us, they don't buy from the garage at the service station. They buy it at the BFP, which is the wholesale price, and then they include their own transportation cost. So their local factors are different from us. That's why their fuel is much cheaper than ours. I've spoken about the slave levy. As you can see, 0-0 there, because the balance in the slave account is actually above the threshold of minus 250 million. Now I can move to illuminating paraffin. Just to show you, in fact, it's better even to show you on the pie chart. 65% of the price is actually the BFP, if you like. And then you have one of the anomalies for paraffin is the retail margin, which is 25%. So if you go back to the previous slide, you see that it's actually more than 3 rand. It's actually even more than the one on the service station, which is 198. And where there are more operations in the service station, they're just filling up paraffin. So these are some of the things that we are reviewing to correct. And then we have your maximum refinery gate price. The reason why I have seen two tables there, one is for the inland, one is for the coastal, coastal market. Also, I can show you on the pie chart. The maximum refinery gate price is around 21%. And as you can see, the liquid margin is at least 11%, not 25%. And then there are other costs that are also included here. That actually talks to the pricing per se. The regulated accounting system was introduced in 2018 to calculate the margin, the industry margin that I spoke about, the wholesale margin, the retail margin, secondary storage, secondary distribution. And the reason why the regulated account was introduced was because in the past, in this industry, we used to have what is known as MPAR, Management of Petroleum Assets Return. So what happens in that MPAR system is that the industry will invest either in service station and so on, but that investment was put under wholesale. Right? It was not separated to show that this for retail, this for distribution and so on. Now that is a problem, because now you end up adjusting the margin based on investment in one area of the industry. For example, most of them will invest in retail, whereas in South Africa maybe we need more storage, but they're all investing in retail and they're getting retail. Now, in order to encourage people and new entrants to come into the market, we then said it's better if you separate all these activities and then retail for each of the activities. So that anyone wants to invest, if a person say I only want to invest in cars to deliver fuel, that person should get return on that investment. If somebody say I want to invest only on storage, that person must be able to get return on those. So based on the study that was done by the EY and so on, we are trying to go the regulated accounting system, which is what we did in 2018. To determine margin for wholesale, for secondary storage, secondary distribution, and the service station. Under the service station, because there are different prices, we are using the benchmark service station, which comes just less than 300,000 liters per month. So that's the benchmark service station. So you hear complaints from some of the service station operators that are actually pumping less than the benchmark service station. And others who are pumping more, they won't be complaining. But that's how the benchmark works. Because we, as a minister, the department does not regulate based on a particular facility. We regulate the industry as a whole. Unlike NERSA, they determine a tariff for this particular story. We determine a tariff for the, a price or a margin for the whole country. So that's why we have to come at the benchmark. And otherwise, sometimes we come above the benchmark or below the benchmark. So in conclusion, just to summarize before I go to the question, petrol is regulated at retail level. So it cannot sell at any price except the regulated price that we announce every month. Diesel is not regulated, but the department publishes a reference price. Illuminated paraffin is regulated, we have a city minimum national retail price. LPG is also regulated both at the refinery gate price level and also at the maximum retail price for LPG. And then we are using the regulated accounts to develop the money. Chairperson, these are some of the frequently asked questions that we get from the department. The first one was, why are the fuel prices changing every month? So the direct answer for them is, we can say it's a government policy decision to decide to change it on monthly basis. It makes it easier for us to manage the over under recovery, also administratively, to have an average for the month, it makes sense. But this can change depending on the decision that is taken. If you decide you want to do it for every quarter and so on, then you must understand the consequences and so on. What are the advantages and disadvantages? But yeah, it's really, it can be anything. 1 month was decided because it's easier to administratively look at the average for the month, but also to deal with the over and under recovery for the previous month. The question of over and under recovery, I addressed that in my presentation. What is over recovery, what is under recovery? Why is petrol cheaper in every country? And the parties have also addressed that one. because of the free labor, they don't get the fund that they don't have. Now, the most critical one is this one about Sasol. People are saying, why Sasol is not selling petrol at lower prices? Because they produce it from coal and they are placed in housing. This particular is coming from people in housing. We once had a caller from Secunda, who also called us and complained that it's there in Secunda, and the Sasol coal to gas plant is there. Why are we paying like everybody else? Why can't they pay less because they are closer to the plant in Sasol? The reality of the matter here is that the petrol price is regulated. So in a regulated market, you cannot sell at any price except the regulated price. Now, let them say the market is deregulated in South Africa. The market can determine the price. Or let me first give an example of diesel. Diesel is not regulated. But if you go to any of the Sasol service stations, what's the price compared to the other oil companies? It's more or less the same. Why can't they sell it less? If they can be able to do that. But what people also don't know is that the coal to gas liquid plant is actually, it actually costs more than a normal refinery to actually build and even to maintain than an actual normal refinery. But what also people don't know is that Sasol is not only about the coal to liquid. There's also Sasol at Natref. Natref is a crude oil refinery. So it's also dollar denominated. It's also crude oil based in terms of pricing. But Sasol alone supplies around 20% or so of the country. So even if Sasol choose to sell at a lower price, everybody will run to Sasol if the market is deregulated. Then Sasol runs out of fuel. Then the other oil companies will notice that it's a shortage, then the price will pick up. People talk about deregulation and so on. They are thinking, once you deregulate, the price will immediately go down. But the reality is that the market that has to deregulate, some of them are going back to regulation. Because they realize that the price will artificially go down because the big players can afford to reduce the prices to recover their money somewhere. And the BP, Total, and so they operate globally. They can afford to do that for 3 months or so just to wipe out the competition. So all these new players who cannot afford to reduce prices for 3 months, they get out of the market. And once they are gone, these big players can then raise the price and nobody can say anything because the market must decide on the price. So the issue of deregulation for South Africa, though it's very critical, the readiness for deregulation is important. We need a market where if we are all going to compete in the market, we can compete on the same footing, the playing field is level. I cannot buy from you and expect to compete with you on price. That does not work. So majority of the independent wholesalers that the prices in South Africa, they are actually customers of this major oil company. So definitely they cannot compete with them. So until you get to a situation where all the barriers, all these things that they have, that make them not to compete with these guys, until they remove them, there's no way you can benefit from this regulation because they cannot compete on prices. And then we then can move to, maybe I'll give another example. In 2006 or so, when we were taking land from petrol to move to land and petrol, some of these companies took time to convince their refineries to be able to do that. And there was a shortage of fuel. You could go to 1, 2, even 3 cent stations without getting fuel. Now imagine that time if petrol was deregulated, you could even pay more than 20 rand a litre of fuel at the next station. But because it's regulated, wherever I get the fuel, the petrol, this is the price I'm going to pay. So deregulation, though people like to talk about it, is very important. Of course, we can always talk about it. But we must only deregulate when we're ready. ULP 95-93, this is the demand side management date that I talked about, 10 cents extra on 95 to discourage people from using 95 when they can use 93. The last one, why is government not buying oil from African countries at lower prices? Firstly, government does not buy oil unless it's for strategic purposes. But in the meantime, South Africa, majority of our crude oil, say 70%, 70% comes from Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, and Angola. That's 70% of our crude oil comes from those three countries. So the oil companies are buying from Nigeria, they're buying from Angola. But it's not at lower prices. because the price of crude oil is dollar denominated. The price of crude oil is determined by an organization called OPEC, Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. These are about 18 or so countries that have a lot of crude oil, and they sit around every meeting and then decide on the price of crude oil. That will determine the price of crude oil. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Well, that's it, Jefferson. That's Jefferson's questions.
All right, Danny. You travel and what? Subject to your question, with the powers vested in me, I may cut off and allow the answer and then come to that. Okay, Honourable Mayor.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. It was very interesting. I do have a couple of questions, and the first one goes to slide 19. If you have a look at the bottom there, so you've got a table that adds up to a subtotal. And then you've got a new line item, contribution to the basic fuel price. I need to understand the difference between the subtotal and the contribution to the basic fuel price. And I mean, I get that the two added together give you your retail price, but how does that work? Where does that come from? Because I don't understand why there's a line item that says contribution to basic fuel price, but I don't know how that's calculated. The second question is over the page. If I look at the illuminating paraffin on the table on slide 19, and I look at the table on slide 20, that doesn't match up at all. The numbers just are completely different. Then I want to go to the comment earlier that to a large degree the fuel price in South Africa is determined by the international oil price. And I can accept that. But if you track the oil price in South African cents, in other words, you've now factored in the exchange rate at the time over the last 10 years. In fact, if you go a little bit further than that, but let's take 10 years. If you have a look in 2014, there was a time when the fuel price dropped by more than 50%, from about $120 per barrel to just under $60 per barrel. And yet, the oil price dropped by that amount. And yet, the fuel price, the petrol price, only dropped by about 30%. And so the tracking of oil price in South African rands and cents to the petrol price does not correlate well, particularly when there are significant decreases in the oil price. When there are increases, it goes up. And it tracks, but when it decreases, it doesn't come down at the same extent. So I'd really like to understand why that is the case. Then, I am also concerned, we purchase a fair chunk of our oil from the Middle East and from African countries, and I have no problem with that. But there are other suppliers of oil that we don't purchase from. I'd like to understand why. The biggest oil producer in the world is the United States, 17 million barrels per day. And they are the fourth biggest exporter in the world. No question that Saudi Arabia is the biggest oil exporter, no question at all. The second biggest exporter is Russia. We don't import anything from Russia. We don't import anything from Canada. We don't import anything from Iraq. These are all major exporters of oil, but they don't appear on our import list. So I'd like to understand that. Then my last question, no, second last question is, if I have a look at again on slide 19, the biggest single contributor to cost, and I mean, if I look at any of the automotive fuels, is the fuel levy. In other words, what is killing the consumer is the government. So my question is, what is the discussion that the Department of Energy is having with Treasury regarding the taxes that are imposed on the consumer with regard to the fuel? So you quite rightly pointed out that it is much cheaper to buy fuel in Botswana because they don't have these taxes. They're purchasing the same fuel from the same refineries, but they don't have these taxes. How are they able to do it, but we're not? And similarly with the road accident fund levy that is included in there as well. Also a major contributor. My last question or comment goes to the statement that deregulation would result in higher prices. And I think that's fear-mongering. I think it's a discussion we need to have. I think it's a discussion that needs to be had between civil society and the government and the petrol industry in South Africa, or the fuel industry in South Africa, as to whether or not we could move to a deregulated environment. But I think that a statement, a bold statement that deregulation will result in higher prices, is simply fear-mongering of the worst kind. If we look at countries that are deregulated, and I'm not talking about oil-producing countries, I'm talking about non-oil-producing countries, these prices are fairly reasonable. On the whole, because oil companies cannot price themselves out of the market. So we need to be careful that when we communicate these things, we're not communicating them in a way that says we're not prepared to consider this because the prices will go up. We have no factual basis to make a statement like that. The prices might go up, but equally they might go down. And that's something that we need to have a discussion as a country about, rather than having it dictated to us. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Williams.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I only have one question. The others are actually comments. My question is, why do you want to discourage the use of 95 octane? Then, again, you know, preventable costs. As you so rightly said, the most expensive mode of transport is trucks. If we were able to improve Transnet, which is a government function, we could then rail. If our harbours worked more efficiently and were actually unloading at the rate they're supposed to be unloading at, we wouldn't be paying the penalties because the ships are taking so long to unload. If we have better policies that are more confident in confidence friendly, our rand dollar exchange wouldn't be as volatile as what it is. Again, with a tax of that we are paying. Is that tax ring-fenced, or does it just go into the pot and disappear into corruption, etc.? Also, we're paying a horrendous amount of tax, but we're not giving our citizens the opportunity or the option of a good public, a good reliable, safe public transport system. So you're imposing a tax on us, but you're not giving them any kind of alternative. And so many of our citizens are so dependent on transport because they live far away from where they work, and a huge percentage of what they earn is used up in transport. We really cannot be just taxing petrol. Okay, it doesn't balance, so what they'll do, we'll just tax petrol. You know, and then to say, well, it's not actually our department because it's the Minister of Finance that does it. It's all the same government. You need to speak to the Minister of Finance. Those were my comments. But a lot of them are, a lot of those costs are actually preventable. And we need to actually do something to prevent it. And we need to be able to tell our people, in our citizens, what we are doing to bring the costs down. Thank you very much.
And the first question is around the fuel price crunch. Would it be correct to assume that if it were not for all these levies, the fuel price would be quite low? So my first question would be, what is the purpose of having some and all of these levies? And what are they still relevant for today? The minister in opening remarks spoke about the 80-20% ratio. The DG says one parent says we must balance what we import with what we produce on the ground. So as we are able to balance and absorb the shock, what are some of your plans to ensure that we improve on this issue? And in your own view, what would be a correct balance in terms of the 20 case of 15? You also spoke on factors that are not covered, which under the CFC working group, on the remuneration of petrol attendants. What is the impact of that? If it's not covered, what is the impact on the basic fuel price? You also spoke of South Africa as the price changer, that whatever the market says, the price will change it, which I don't think is feasible moving forward. What are some of the plans that you have in place to mitigate on this particular fact? I don't know if I heard you correctly in your presentation when you touched a bit on some of the people not selling paraffin not at a regulated price. What are the consequences for that if they are in? But I don't think it's acceptable that if they are certain regulations and some people are not complying with them. What are the consequences for such? I do not stop there for more
thanks. Thanks, Chair. Greeting again to the Minister and his team. I think the first point I want to make, Chair, is not a question, it's a comment. That in this complex discussion, I think it was a bit wrong for the department not to invite us to the Africa Oil Summit so that we become students as well. We would have learned a lot clearly. I just wanted to make that point. The second point I want to make is that there has been repeated point about diesel not being regulated. Unless explanation in layman's term why I'm not deregulating that. Because from where I'm seated, you announce prices every first Wednesday of the month. You don't announce petrol prices, paraffin prices, and so on. You even announce the diesel one. Is it a coincidence that it's not regulated, but you do have the pricing formula for it. I just need, as a student as well, for you to take us through what causes this coincidence, if it's a coincidence, so that we understand better. The third point is about the focus attendance wage adjustment, which contributes to fuel prices going high. I would imagine, Minister, that the price of bread goes up because you can pay once you use the same money to pay their workers. I don't know how it works, but to me it sounds very strange that you would open a business, you know you are selling petrol, but you rely on those prices to pay your workers. To a layman like me, put it in a bread and butter environment and in a store. Does it make sense? To me, it's not making sense as it is now. The fourth point I want to ask is that I'm not sure whether it was Minister Hadebe when we had a problem with price shock, announced that there will be a task team constituted by the Department of Energy and Treasury to review the basic fuel prices. Can we get progress in that? Because it was meant to mitigate the fuel hikes. So it's very important that the committee is taken through where is the progress, what is the work of that task team up until today. The other point I want to make, Chair, is that in the annual report of 2018-2019, it was made that as a point that significant amount of crude oil, actually 51%, came from African countries, Nigeria being holding 33%, Angola 12, Ghana 5, and Togo 1, which makes 1%. As opposed to the question of why are we not bringing other players like America, like Russia, and my question is, because African countries demonstrated that they can produce and provide us with 51%. Where's the expansion? Why are we not expanding our own reliance to the African continent and not the rest of the country? Because in many a times you mentioned that many of the aspects why petrol price or oil prices go up is because China and America, when they decide to throw tantrums to each other, we suffer here. Why are we not accelerating our reliance to Africans? At least we can manage our own tantrums with Nigeria and South Africa or with any other African country who have been managing the situation forever. Why are we not doing that? Probably the last point, Chair, comes from the people from Gauteng. The question asked, why is Sasol not selling petrol at lower prices because they produce it from coal and they are placed in GP? Maybe again for me to understand, and you bear with me, this subject needs patience to us so that we understand better. I learned that in partnership with Sasol, the Mozambican government and the South African government, Sasol owns 50% of what comes from Mozambique. We own 25% of that. We actually own the pipeline. two ideas. Now, you did mention that from Durban to Johannesburg, some of the costs that create higher prices would be the pipeline fees. Now, we have ideas and their pipeline. To me, when you are in a 50%, 25%, 25% relationship, you become partners. Could it be that we can't have the relaxation of those prices, those charges you are talking about of the pipeline, because we're in a partnership that time? And understand me from a very uneducated point on that subject, very uneducated, but I'm provoking you to expand so that we understand where you come from. If I was from Gauteng and what I'm saying is correct, I would still ask the question in a different way. Thanks, John.
Okay. Can you add what you think?
Let me take the first question. And then the second question. The first question I want to respond to is, why don't we prisoners from the US and Russia? Actually, Honorable Macau can ask us, why don't we increase our sourcing in the continent? Because oil producers are in a cartel, it gives us no advantage to buy from Russia or the US. Therefore, it is more logical to increase our intra-Africa trade. It's an issue that we are discussing with African countries. In the Africa Oil Conference, we had discussion with a number of them, including the Equatorial Guinea, who produce a sizable amount of gas and oil exported to the East. And they were saying, they don't have the customer in the continent. And to me, it's an anomaly that they don't have a customer in the continent. And my own view is that as long as we don't take a conscious decision to improve our intra-Africa trade, Africa will always be a junior partner, even where it is actually with the capacity to receive that. So I think we should look into that. That what advantage we would give us to go to Russia and US. And if you look into the company, you write that there's insurance, there's tomorrow, there's this. We just increase those costs if we go further away. My own view is that we should actually improve our intra-Africa trade in this regard. That takes me to the question of whether we should have all these levels. It's a choice we make. For example, many of you don't understand why. All the labor can't don't have it. If you are a parliamentarian like me and you, you may say that because you will insure yourself. But a person in the street who cannot insure itself depends heavily on the road accident fund for compensation. So it's a choice we can make, that is, we throw all our people under the bus, they can see to finish. Therefore, there should be no road accident. We can take that decision. Because we're in a position to do so, but it is a decision that is disadvantaged the poor. Because I can insure myself, you can insure yourself. But a person in the street who gets involved in taxi accidents every day have no insurance at all. That's why the road accident is a program of going to various areas to explain access to the road extent one, which is a good program. So it's up to us to think about some of these decisions. Why are we in a price taker? If you don't produce, you are a price taker. If you produce, you become a price setter. At this point in time, we are actually a price taker because we produce less, we depend on importing of those, of crude oil. The last point I want to talk to is the Southerners Africa World Conference. It's unfortunate that many of these conferences are not run by us. We get invited to our own conferences. Invest in Africa, mining in the Hammer, run by the British. Africa Oil Conference run by the Americans. We're invited in those conferences. But the difference we're beginning to make is our presence and attendance is doing really important things. There should be South African entities that are part of those entities that organize those conferences. And one of the things that I don't spend sleeplessness about is that if we don't have ideas, other people start the ideas. I don't think we should be casting aspersions about why do people have ideas that we do not have. They form Africa Oil Conference, they have invested in Africa, mining in Dhamma, and we didn't have the idea, they have the idea. We must talk to them about how to contribute and be part of that. I went to the wind in Dhamma, that was a week. Actually, you know what they said? That they said it was the first time in 5 years of their existence that there was a minister in the meeting. So it means we don't pay our attention to many of those things. We can remove our eyes from the board and the board tops. That's it. Lastly, the pipeline. It's a social constructed pipeline. They have 50%, they have given the state 25% of the Mozambican state, 25%. That contract is going to end at that point. I have an outstanding visit to Mozambique to talk to that government, because one of the things that we should normalize is the relationship between ourselves and the Mozambican government, so that when there's a discussion about the contract of that pipeline, we should be aligned with the Mozambican government. Because the Mozambican government may say, we don't want to be here, we take a different initiative. We have a responsibility to talk to the Mozambican government, normalize our relationship with them. That's my comment. If you have a question, please.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chakas and members. The first question I'm going to take is on the issue of the drop in crude oil price versus the drop in fuel price. I think first of all, there isn't a one-on-one relationship in the drop of crude oil price and the price of petroleum products. So when the price of crude oil drops, the owners of refineries that we use as benchmark, they see that as a benefit for them. It's their time to make up for the losses they made when the crude oil price was up. So our benchmarks are refining centers in Italy, Singapore, and the Arab Gulf. So you will find that they don't drop the product prices at the same percentage, that's one. Secondly, what you found that year, and I recall quite well, is that there was an increase in the fuel list, quite a significant one in the subsequent year. So that also then had an impact on what then became the price at the end. The issue of deregulation, if I can take that as next, we are actually in a process of looking at managed a managed way of mimicking the market as much as possible. The question about why we change the price every month instead of every quarter, the purchases of crude oil and petroleum products are paid for either within days or within months. So what you then do is you try and make sure that your regulatory environment mimics what happens in the market. So the issue that I think Mr. Michael was talking about the increase in prices is because of infrastructure. So in order to move towards a more less regulated market or deregulated, we need to sort out the issue of infrastructure. For a long time, the infrastructure, petroleum infrastructure in this country was locked within the oil major. That was the situation. However, recently, what you've seen is that with the merchant owners of infrastructure terminals coming in, that stranglehold is beginning to be broken, and you are then creating an environment where competition can then be thrive. And once you have that, and at the correct time, you can then make a call to say that to the decision makers that we believe now it is time to loosen, the regulatory environment. I believe that we are moving towards that, perhaps at a rapid pace, but I don't think that we are there yet, because some of the infrastructure, for example, the pipeline, is still shared. In order to do this, we also need a competition commission that can respond whenever there are anti-competitive tendencies from some of the major oil companies. Give an example. An import terminal is contracted in Cape Town by an independent party. And then you find that the storage is basically bought by the oil major and is not used fully by the oil major. They buy it just to make sure that the competition cannot then make use of that. So there is always a need for coordination between ourselves and the competition commission, as well as NASA, to make sure that whatever infrastructure has been constructed, those who contract for the use of it actually do need that. They are not using it as an anti-competitive measure. So it is true that we have to do a study on the impact of deregulation, but of course, given the current conditions, we don't think that the benefit will be huge for the consumer. The minister has dealt with the issue of other suppliers. Maybe on the issue of import from African countries, what happens is that the oil majors own the blocks. Let's give an example. In Angola, Total owns the blocks. So when they have to import, they import out of the block that they own in Angola. Similarly, Chevron would do that. Similarly, BP would do that. would find that a Shell import out of a block that they own in Nigeria, but it's still their block. So they basically get the oil off the ground and they bring it in to the country. The issue that the minister was raising about strengthening CEF is critical, because with a strong CEF and its subsidiaries, government is then able to use that vehicle to make sure that either we get blocked in this country, from which we can then bring our own crude and then we can sell it in the market, or else we are then, with a strong CEF, we have a balance sheet strong enough to be able to intervene in the market. Now, what is a balance from the 80-20? The question asked by Honorable Mpula. Best practice is that you ideally want to have 55% for 55-45. That is the recommendation given from the International Energy Agency. So we are not there yet, but I think that with the discoveries that are being made in the country and other plans that the minister has spoken about interacting with the counterparts in the continent, we believe that we can get to that stage. The issue of paraffin regulation and consequence management for people who don't sell at the correct price, I think it's an issue of capacity. You have more than 33,000 outlets selling paraffin in the country. Now, to police that, so this is in addition to the 4,600 petrol stations or service stations that we have, as well as other wholesalers. But at the retailers, you have more than 33,000. And some of these, in fact, most of them, are not licensed, because you don't license spaza shops and so on. And to actually manage that would be a mammoth task. So one of the ways that one needs to think about how best to deal with that is to have a partnership with the local authority to be able to help you monitor those prices. But I think, again, even with local authorities, there are other competing priorities. They will be having inspectors to go to each and every spaza shop to look at the price. So it is something that we can do better there, but still, with the increase in the number of retail outlets, you'll be chasing a moving target. I think the issue of Sasol has been dealt with, but I want to say this about Sasol. When you regulate a market, you regulate for the whole market. You don't say, I'm regulating for the crude oil producer, coal to liquid and so on. It doesn't work well. And you actually have to take into account that Sasol imports crude oil at market prices, whereas these other companies, they import crude oil from their own blocks. So if a company, let's say a BP, for example, has got a block in Saudi Arabia, then you would know that they can produce oil there, get it off the ground at less than $20 a barrel. But their competitor in South Africa, which is Sasol, has to buy that crude oil at market price. So whatever they make from the coal to liquid, they lose in the crude oil imports, because unlike all the other majors in the country, they don't have blocks. in other countries other than the gap that they have in modern. The task team with the treasury, I think the task team is work in progress, but I can say that what we then decided, because there were many competing priorities within the national treasury system, we decided to run the PSP review, as a department in consultation with them. The PSP review, we have just finished the initial assessment and submitted an interim report. The interim report shows that there are elements that can change. However, I want to caution, whatever change comes will be a once-off change. So we will say we no longer have the 15% insurance for bringing products to South Africa. It will come off the price, but it's a once-off. The following month, we're back to the other impact of the global environment, rent, dollar, as well as crude oil price. So any benefit that will be seen, there will be a once-off, and then the following month, we will be back to the up and downs of the market. But it is a work that we believe is close to completion. What we are proposing to do, as we did previously, is that we run a parallel process. For a few months, we run prices on the existing formula and the one that will replace it, and see what are the benefits, whether there are benefits. If we don't see benefits, most probably we will recommend that we stay in the program. If there are benefits, we will then make the recommendation accordingly. The four-quarter adjustment, the issue of the four-quarter tender, I think it's mainly because of the regulated price. The price of bread is not regulated, and you find that different retailers they charge different prices. Whereas with the petrol price, there's one price, and as part of the build-up to the to the formula, we had to make space in the regulation mechanism for 4% tenders to be paid. And I think the benefit for that is to make sure that there is no 4% tenders in the country that is not paid the price that is prescribed. Because if you do that, then you are, outside the legal prescription. So effectively, the wages of all 4% tenders in the country are the same. Nobody should be paying below that. They can pay above, not below, because we are all as consumers paying for that in the fuel price. One of the disadvantages, for example, of a deregulated market is that you may find that a number of retail owners, one, cut back on the number of employees that they have, and also begin to then pay people less than what they actually deserve to be paid. So it was an intentional, there was an intentional provision to say that in the pricing framework, we should make sure that the four-quarter attendance, and in fact all the retail workers, actually get to improve on the wages that they get. Yes, I think the others, the commission chair, Mr. Mate, will deal with.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, DDG. Firstly, Chairperson, let me apologize to the hour. I came very strongly being anti-deregulation. be equal, the playing field must be level. If I cannot go to Singapore and bring a level of food, it means I cannot compete with the big three to try and so on. So if you deregulate, it means you're taking me out of the market. The issue of prices and so on, we can debate it, we can leave material and so on. But I must apologize if I came very strongly. I'm literally saying we're open to discussion and discussion. The issue around, somebody said the levies and so on, if Botswana can do without, why can't we do without? I'm not going to enter into your state, Minister, but what I want to say is the economy of Botswana compared to our economy and their needs compared to our needs are going to change. So that is why we find we have more taxes in our side because our needs are more. We have free tertiary education, in the social ground and so on. Botswana don't have those, so there's no need for it. So if you compare, you're going to study the challenges and so on. But as many people say, this is a decision that government must take. It's not a decision of the Department of Energy. You take the decision then inform us and so on. Then the issue around, before I go to the question, I think the issue of pipeline is also very important to separate the Sasol pipeline from the Transnet network of pipelines. Because the Sasol pipeline is specific from Mozambique to Secunda, and it's got a different tariff from there. That's where the government has a stake of 25%. Whereas the ones that we're talking about from Gabe and Finland and so on, those are the Transnet network of pipelines, and they are filling the program product. And Transnet charges these guys who are bringing product, who are shipping products through the pipeline, and then that invoice then comes to the department and they cover to the price, only for petrol because it's regulated. I just wanted to clarify that. And then in terms of the BSP subtotal, honorable, that you talked about, BSP is all the international element that we talked about, but if you want to see the calculation of that, we can also show it. But we just brought it in here because it's part of the pump price. So all the other elements that you see here, these are all the local elements, right? These are all the local elements that we determine internally South Africa. Then the BSP that you see, contribution of the BSP, this is the one that is international, right? That's the rest of B and everything else. But we didn't show the actual calculation there. And then in terms of the slide that we talked about of IP, that is, we must also apologize, Minister, because this one is not updated. So the document that you should be looking at for the price is this one, because it's the latest one. So we also apologize for that. Then in terms of the discouraging motor is from using 95, all of our refineries in South Africa are compatible and compatible to produce 93. You know, then to get to 95, we have to bring other chemicals to actually bring the octane to 95, which is additional cost. So that's why we are discouraging motorists from using 95, because it actually costs the refineries even more to produce 95 than producing 93. But we also understand that some of the manufacturers right now actually forcing to use 95. So we just found it to be a waste of octane. Some countries, we are told, are even using 92 or even 91 octane. So they are even using 91 octane. I won't talk about the other one that has been addressed. He said, why is diesel not being regulated? It's historic, Minister. When the price regulation actually started, the contribution of diesel and the retail space was very low. It was mainly petrol that was used by consumers. And diesel was mainly...
Let me speak to the progress. Otherwise, what is being sold tomorrow?
No, diesel was mainly used in the commercial space. It was used in farming, agriculture, and so on. So as a result, it was not deregulated so that in that commercial space there can be, you know, rebates, discounts, and so on, because it was beneficial to the economy. So we've continued with that trend, but we've seen that the diesel motor vehicles have actually increased at the retail level. And in fact, some of the people are saying we should also be thinking about regulating diesel. But again, that's a debate, Minister. Will we regulate more or do we have to move towards deregulation? So we'll be guided by the House on that one. And then I think I've covered the one that for me is it. In terms of the announcement of the diesel price, maybe what is not coming clear in the media is that when we announce the price, we make it very clear that we are taking the retail price of petrol, which is the pump price which is regulated. In terms of the diesel and IP, we say these are the wholesale retail price, which then are the reference prices. That's basically what's supposed to come out in the media statement.
Okay, let me start here. It's nice because we are learning. Start from where the minister is there, just to and also saw the digital of Kula is like with a little bit of concern that what you have in terms of your information mostly are text based, and you say you are waiting for national treasury, but you could see the many on the table. My major concern is that, but they expect you to stick to what they've got control of. That becomes a little bit of a technical matter. And for me, I move from the premise that was a conscious decision that they had to be made, that national treasury should also be able to. I'm not saying my comment is not helping enough. Let me be honest, not helping enough, because we don't know what the distance between you and the national treasury in that move. And when we find that national treasury is still holding its arms, sitting where they were before, and just when you are far ahead, they say no, but remember, we also have to be the ones who make a final determination on some of the. So if we can, that to me, I understand the idea. The second one, which I think is the limitation, and I'm looking at it, whether we should even look at it, even expanding beyond what is ordinarily yours. What I'm saying to you is the interaction at the level of the import of the product, which is crude oil. And I understand that that's not the issue. The limitation is that maybe if we can expand, because we may deal and trust everything here, and only find out in a year or two, we will come back and say, No, what you asked us, we have gone past it. We have done the review, I'll be more interested on how far are you, or what is your timeline when you deal with the review of this. And what are the other, they may not be essentially what is in your intention to trade. I'm saying from what you missed out. I said, well, I remember when we were dealing with the IRP process, the issue of the interactions and interaction, I'm looking whether in that review would you consider what should be the other areas of trade, especially for this market. The reason I'm saying is that to me, Africa is highly endowed, both with almost on minerals, whether it's crude oil or it's mineral resources. Maybe you can help us, even on your investment as well. At times, I'm not saying from where I sit, and I'm not defending the issue that Honorable Marcelo has raised with Honorable Minister. But the question remains fundamental. If you've got so much in abundance of crude oil and financial layer, so much in mineral resources. But sometimes what you say invest in Africa, you are controlled from external to say invest in Africa. But Africa has got resources to invest in itself. Or even in exchange. Those days there was something in the early primitive period where we were told that what is the distance to Dawa, where you'll be given a cow in order to
there's a small sorry, no trick for us. Just to give you a count. And that's what happened to me. But I'm saying, how is it something that in that review there's an overarching in terms of package? So that whilst we look at Nigeria, Angola, and many others when it comes to crude oil, we also look at what we have so that that inter-Africa trade is not, so I'm saying because fortunately we are dealing with one department, is not only narrowed down on item based, but is based on what is this wealth that Africa possesses. So that when we trade, it is not only on the basis that we get this there, but we look at this. The last point is, which I'm saying again, becomes a limitation, Honorable Minister. Well, thanks that you are working around the clock anyway. You might have been saying the same thing on a different platform in a different area. That is the consolidation and enhancement of staff. And looking at what then has to be done. To what extent, probably that could be quite interesting as a contribution again to the review. I know that those teams, one of the things we've said, there has to be that turnaround strategy. To what extent will that look at the central role that the staff and its entities is supposed to play in the entire scheme of things? So that's why I'm saying my limitation at this stage is that we might exhaust and engage and then be told that, look, our discussions with the treasurer have stuck because the treasurer has shot behind or the area that was identified. But the second thing is that we may not be sure of the timeline in relation to the review process underway, which for me I would be more comfortable to say then what becomes the aspect probably of that review. Is it just a review on accessing crude oil and then that's it? Or is it an overarching based on the general and the African context? But I don't want to limit honorable members and say no, they shouldn't. But when you say you are not sure of the steps ahead, you may see. So that I think if we take the discussions that for me, the department is raising, the other members are raising, what are regulation or pure regulation? They may not necessarily assist now if we don't have the process of review. Because only the process of review will then be able to say, amongst other issues, we feel that in certain areas there has to be or there has not to be, or the justification, but I feel that we may justify it still here. Or give explanation on regulation and non-regulation, and only when you come back, you say the same thing that probably would have been said. But beyond that, some of these issues may not necessarily fall within your own ambit, but they may require the scheduled lawmakers to then say, this is what finally, in terms of law, has to be done. But is there any other follow-up that Honorable want to make? Honorable Mashaule and then Honorable Weda. You can then respond on what I have just said.
Honorable Mashaule. No, thanks, Chair. It's just two things. On the regulation of diesel, the first one. Correctly put, it's... said to the minister it's historic. That's why you left it like that, because it was understood that people in that space were farmers, were in the commercial space. Underlying historic, because historically in South Africa, certain things were done to favor others. And correctly so, in this space, we were not in that space. Now, for you to leave it like that, because it's historic. To me, it doesn't make sense, because you need to reevaluate why was it like that before for you to move on. So I just want to plead that, Minister, you probably need to take a look at this. It can't be that we leave things because they are historic. What are the benefits of changing it? What are the limitations of changing it now when we move forward? Because I may ask you, who was the farmer before, who is the farmer now? You may find that there's no change. And why you leave it like that? The second point is that I just want to understand on the task team and its work and producing what is once off. And you made an example that if you were to, the department, like it has recommended, that 15% premium should be removed from the freight rate and actual freight cost be obtained from the relevant international pricing agencies, and it becomes once off. We see the benefits in that once off. Are we not going to create a side shock when we go to the next month or so? Are things going to go up again, or there will be a balance? Because if there is no balance, to me, I would not want to pay 12 rand next month, and then the other month, I'm going back to 15 rand. The system will be shocked a bit. So I'm saying, will there be a balance to say, if we go to 12 rand, we're going to be hovering around 12 rand, or we're still going to go up to 15 rand, because if that's the case, then the ones of will create more shock than we.
Thank you, Chairperson. Two questions or two comments follow up. The first one is with regard to the relationship between the oil price and the fuel price, and I take the point that it's not a direct one-to-one relationship. But every time there has been a significant decrease in the oil price, there hasn't been a correlating increase in the fuel price. But when there has been an increase in the oil price, there has been a correlating increase in the fuel price. In other words, the oil price comes down, the petrol price doesn't come down as much. Oil price goes up, fuel price goes up, a similar or even higher percentage. So it's almost as if there's profit taking in the regulation of the price. Now, I could be completely wrong here, but if I look at the graph and if I look at the percentages of the changes between the lowest and the highest points, that's what I see. And it hasn't been quite as dramatic over the last 3 to 4 years. But certainly before that, it was very, very significant. Minister, you spoke about the Road Accident Fund and the need for the Road Accident Fund. There's a simple way around this. First of all, let's acknowledge that the Road Accident Fund is essentially bankrupt, that it has liabilities of 600 billion rand that it can't fund, and that this levy is not making enough of an impact to address the challenges, and that those challenges arise primarily from corruption and litigation. But there is a solution to this, and that is to do away with the Road Accident Fund completely and make third-party insurance on all motor vehicles compulsory. And as soon as you do that, the onus is on the owner of the vehicle to have, and this is the way it used to be in South Africa, the owner of the vehicle to have insurance to pay for any accidents that they are involved in, whether that's with an individual pedestrian or another motorist or however it may be. They need to have compulsory third-party insurance. So I think this idea that we need to have road accident fund in order to compensate people, I think that's a fallacious idea, and it's become something of a a welfare system, for want of a better word. I don't know the, I can't find the words to describe it better. But we don't need to have the Road Accident Fund. We don't need to have a government-administered system to compensate people who are in accidents. That should be the responsibility of the vehicle owner and the vehicle driver. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. We you know, I was going to answer the simple one. See, where I come from, there used to be a very big fight. I'm looking at the petrol price. This has been the oil price. That there used to be a very strong debate that the petrol industry will increase their tax effect. But when the fuel price goes down, they never reduce the petrol price. And the answer was simple, when it is down, when it is up, you can't bring it down because there are other cost materials that are considered. But when it increases, it's only the basis of the increasing fuel. But it's an interesting one, even this one, but let me leave it to those who are supposed to answer. Honorable
I won't get into the regulation and the tax base, but just emphasize the fact that if you want kind of have every department given the right to collect money, so the corruption that Honorable Miller is talking about will be sanitized. Treasury is the only department that collects money. Whether it is for whether it is a department based money, it's collecting it. It is.
Sorry, Chair, I'm misunderstanding the Minister. I apologize for interrupting you, Minister. But I didn't say that the department should collect money. I said that there should be compulsory third-party insurance.
No, that is a later question. I'm coming to that.
Oh, okay.
Can you wait for the answer?
I'm sorry, I'm misunderstanding the Minister's response.
I'm coming to that. Patience is virtue. Patience is virtue.
So it's getting to the point.
Yes. Patience is virtue. Impatience is not a strength. Now, I'm saying finances are a direct responsibility of treasury. We may be uncomfortable with it. You see, treasury ought to stick to what they can control. It may also be bigger kind of thing. They do stick to what they can control. Secondly, the inaction at the level of import of crude oil and intra-Africa trade in other areas. You see, intra-Africa trade is quite important for us, not just crude oil and minerals. Because Africa must grow beyond the pit-to-port kind of economy, where it drills, extracts, and exports. So everything comes from where it is extracted, goes to the coast. It must process things within the continent and trade among themselves. That will be a better Africa that we're looking at. So whether it is minerals, whether it is oil, but there must be value addition within the continent. Africa can invest in itself. But Africa is not an island. It will have to appreciate that it is part of the global village and it is trading with others as well. Because sometimes there is this feeling that Africa must be itself and be isolated to everybody else. There is no success story that is based on that theory. Africa must grow, trade with itself and trade with others. And therefore that wealth can be multiplied. The Solar Energy Fund role and its subsidiaries. We think it's waiting for the new get stabilized there. We'll be able to control quite a number of areas that we're dealing with. And we'll have a prayer for that. And you know that we've sorted out the government side. We're busy now looking at filling the position for COs. Want to do that before the end of the year. Processes permitting. And the reason for that is, once you sort out your governance and your administration, you actually have control in mitigating against both financial and operational risk. Until we reach that stage, we're going to be in trouble. We are working on that, and we're hoping that we're going to succeed. I won't talk to regulation, okay? But I want to talk to this thing of historic, the word historic. One of the mistakes that we normally commit is to look at everything that is historic as bad. That is a mistake. Some of the things need to be extrapolated to facilitate the current process. If we are beginning to develop emerging farmers and we tighten the rules, let's say on diesel and other things, to the disadvantage of those emerging farmers, we may think that we're collecting the historic benefit rather, while in essence we're depriving the emerging beneficiaries from a system. So my own view, I just want to talk about this historic that we become sensitive. I've seen it. I grew up in the Bantustan. I've seen us killing irrigation schemes on the basis of that they are apartheid irrigation schemes, and we started. And I think we should change that and appreciate that a system that works must be used and extended to the emerging countries. I just wanted to deal with the question of just historic. Honourable Madam, you didn't listen to me. You jumped quickly. What I was taking from you is the concern about corruption. That's what I took from you. I was not responding to a question. I'm now going to respond to a question. Now, the question of oil price and fuel price not moving at the same rate. I'm sure in the presentation we've given various factors that impact on the price of fuel. Now, the price of crude oil is but one factor. For example, the exchange rate. Let's make an example that there's this change in the crude oil price. And at that point in time, volatility of the exchange rate begin to play itself out. It will have a different outcome in terms of what the movement on the petrol price is or on the fuel price. So it is not just the crude oil price and then fuel price, that's all. There are other factors that impact on the movement of that price. Roger Silver is bankrupt, corruption is litigation and so forth. Owner of the car myself with insurance, but the reality of the matter is that you get involved there and then discover at that point that your next person doesn't have insurance. All I'm talking to people who have no cars, who are passengers, who die on the road. And my only worry is this thing of being allergic to welfare. Don't be allergic to welfare, because people who are allergic to welfare, it doesn't become a functional issue, it becomes an ideological issue. That welfare is often associated with bad. People who are having access to relative wealth are allergic to welfare. People who are actually poor cannot be allergic to welfare. So, that is all I want to say. The technical side will respond, but we should disabuse ourselves of being alerted to welfare for the poor.
Maybe let me deal with the issue of the task team. In the task team, when we set it up with the National Treasury, we deliberately excluded taxes. That was because, as Minister has indicated, in our view, the mandate for determining fuel levies and any other levy is that of the National Treasury, cabinet and the approval of parliament. So that was the decision up front, because we thought that we could get into a space that is not directly energy related. I think the plea that we normally make is that the rates of the increase, must not then create challenges for us as a department, because people then look to us to explain this, but we were delivering. The consultation on the review of the CFP, so that's what the task team was focusing on. That consultation, we also agreed that let's publish the draft document. That document was published for comment. The comment period has come and gone. There have been recommendations made by the various stakeholders. And in terms of that, we are now at the stage where we are going to report back to the minister on the work that we have done, and then that then will go to for a decision by the minister as to the way forward. But what we also are recommending is that let's have a parallel monitoring period where we run what we have discovered as the things that need to be removed and the existing, and see that if we were to have the new formula, what would be the impact versus keeping the existing one. That request is a request that we are making to the minister, but that is where the process is currently. I cannot give a definite timeline as to when that all that work will be concluded. I think maybe if an impression is created that we are not working very closely with Treasury, I think we are, except that the taxes we deliberately said they are not part of our terms of reference. I will say this, that we've observed that the fuel levy is one of the most efficient ways of collection, because you have 6 or 7 players collecting billions of rand. These are now the oil majors, instead of having different points of collection. I think maybe the issue then is, again, not for us to look at going forward the sustainability of the fuel levy, given that there will be electric cars into the future. I think that is something that we have to do at that point. The issue that Minister raises on peak support, I don't just thought it could just be the same example to say that Angola, Nigeria, Ghana, they produce a lot of food, but they import more than 80% of their finished product. That's the current reality in South Sahara. That even though countries are well endowed, they export the food and then import the finished product. And that is something that I believe needs to change in the continent generally. I think the issue of the price going up and the oil majors benefiting of definitely not the South African one. In fact, when the crude oil price goes up, the local refiners actually make huge losses because they have to import a dollar-denominated crude oil and sell the product in rent. So they benefit mainly when the crude oil price goes down, not when it's going up. Especially those ones that are operating in the country.
Honourable members, Minister, thank you very much. Let me say this. Let's say the point you are raising is that if that is true, it will be important exactly the same point that they saw. I was saying, I'm skeptical to enter that discussion if we are already on the review. Let's look at the comprehensive strategy of change, which for me doesn't only go on buying oil and then giving you goals and so forth. It goes beyond to say there are many areas that can be identified as environmental zone to bring the aside base of the economy in different parts of the country. That's for me the point we're raising, to say with what we have, how bad do we consolidate? My main worry is, and I didn't want to say this thing now, my main worry sometimes is this is on that trade that sometimes is outside the African continent. I'm not saying get out of drinks, but I look at sometimes we end up having gold producing countries. Now with oil producing countries, your own pet and this, that. But some of these, if they were consolidated as a trade strategy within the African continent. Now the point I was only making reference was that hopefully in that reviewed strategy, it will look at the strength from the department's point of view, it will look on the strategic approach on Africa intra-trade in the area where we are without going to other areas. But also for me, I was looking at what you had started, which is I have 300% the question of the value addition, it's part of it. But I'm afraid I can't talk to agriculture and others, but I'm looking at internally, within where we can from the committee's point of view, the interest. For example, we could be able to say, once we produce this and others are producing this one, we are looking at an identified place of processing. Exactly not to deal with finished product, but to say in what you are doing. Obviously, the trade at a global level must also be informed on what you are doing within the continent. So I'm saying that review, it would be nice to see it beyond just a review on the price, but on commodity trade within the industry. But also linked to this, I must say, it's going to be important because some of these
I don't know, we can have this discussion until the other day. The fact of the matter is that two departments, you are only contributing. Two departments were the main central, for instance, on the question of the train. Well, I'm told it's labor, who's paying the transport, who may have an interest. I'm saying when the RAF, the road accident fund, is transport. So it means it may not have to be only reduced to two departments, which is mineral resources and energy and treasure. Surely they will have to be to play also an active role on whatever that they do, because that's where the Act talks to in the way. So you are only the pocket that is being used. So I'm saying if we're to get all those, for me those used to say, going forward, these are the areas that we have decided. The last point is that this is work in progress. For me, I've raised this issue from the point that there are many other, it would be nice when we have that broader discussion to even look at the issues that members were raising. The impact may not necessarily, when we look at diesel, and so, but to look at the extended benefits and the extended consequences beyond that, so that this discussion, when it does take place, we also, for an example, is that whether you like it or not, when you make a discussion on the basis, which is the point for me, it has been the reason to have a discussion of this nature. Part of these issues was also the impact of the fuel crisis in growing the economy. So we rather have a broader discussion that also look at the economic impact of these two, not just the price and so forth. This is how it's calculated. It's nice, that's what we gave you. Now we gave you the basic formula on the question of, but we need now to even say, when you do this review, please assist us to say, to understand the basic areas, what are the implications, what are the carryovers, because sometimes there is this change of complaint that for the one who is plowing, is complaining about the price from the field, and the one who is transporting is complaining about from the field to the point where I'm supposed to be delivered, and the one who is processing is also complaining, and so that very change, it has also to be factored in so that we can, because as I said, that for me, I'm not looking just at face value, but to give deeper, so that we are able to address the concerns that they've made so much uproar out there. I'm not saying they were, I don't think anyone can stand up and say they are unnecessary. They were necessary to some degree, because people were beginning to feel the pain. So I thought I must bring that. Maybe we can have even a worse discussion beyond this, because by the way, there is another proposal where there is a crisis. I won't mention that crisis. Where there is a crisis, there is another proposal to say, to address that crisis, look at the question of the fuel levies and so forth, to address the utility that's not yours, it's another area. So we need to deal with those issues, because at the end of the day, it might be easy, and I listen to people, it might be easy to say, no, do away with this thing, go there. And we will come back again and switch and say, this is additional to what is already a tax crisis. So I thought this is the issue, but thank you very much, Honorable Minister and your team. We need to find a problem with the country. That was enough. Honorable members, we haven't said so. We've got a... You are released, Minister, if you feel so. Anyway, honorable members, we've got a 3 sets of minutes. You want to...
There is a minute of the 16th of October. There is a minute of the 22nd. And there is a minute of the 5th. In the future. Minute of the 16th is for the 2 pages. Oh, two, by the way. Page 1. Honorable Madam
Chair, all the way through, my initials are wrong.
Okay.
I'm KJ, not KM or KH.
Okay.
It's because
KJ.
KJ.
Okay.
J for 2 years.
So, is it true that you are a white person? Okay.
Honorable Juju, Chief.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Page 1. We are still on page 1. Page 2. Honorable Mali.
Chairperson, I think the Venera Day opening welcome to the second line with regard to the method of how to call it to be going to protest.
No,
it's
okay. Page 2.
After comma, the committee resolved all the problems.
Done. As I go to page two, page 3. Any mover? Yes. Madam.
Chair, move the adoption of minutes.
Any seconder? Honorable Masaude.
I second the adoption of the minutes.
How many to the house? Okay. Any matters arising? None? Okay, minutes of the 22nd of October. 22nd of October. Page 1. So corrected KJ. Okay. Gina. Okay, welcome. Page 2.
There's an initial problem there too, Chair.
No, that's why I said it's corrected.
On page 2.
Oh. Yeah, it's going to be corrected.
Thanks, Chair.
They call it mutantis, mutantis.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Any mover? Honorable Phillips.
Chair, I move that the
minutes
be adopted
and stable. Honorable
Milagun. I second.
Okay. Any matters arising? Okay. Minutes of the fifth. Honorable Phillips.
Just a correction for Springbok, sir. Springbok with an E. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Malin.
Everything I'm not sure of because my co-editor or TV did not see this one, Honorable Philip, the paragraph where the line where she was correcting. He also passed his condolences for the of passing away of the MEC for Social Development in Gauteng.
And then to the Mozambique KG, not KG. Okay. Page 2. Huh?
No, I wanted to raise the voice.
Which one? No, you can't speak on this way. You raise your hand if you want to. I don't know how much you are paying.
No, he just wanted to say on a lighter note, after the Springbok, you can on the bracket put case as sheets.
We are collecting meanings here. We are not happy things that were not there. Don't divide the house. Page 2.
If it was my name spelled wrong, I would let it slide, but the surname represents my great-grandfather. I would not let it slide. I'm not Makuwane, I'm Makawane.
Okay.
The entire page is.
Okay, it's going to be corrected. Correct the page. Makawane. So this is correct on the attendance.
Always.
Okay. Honorable members, any match on page 2? A move of the minute. Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move that we adopt the minute with all the corrections.
Honorable Zungula.
I second.
You want to ask? All coins.
You can second even if it's absent.
Is that so?
You cannot move for the adoption.
Oh. Well, I'm told. I'm guided. I would have. Well, would you mind, Honorable Zongola, if we don't take the risk? How don't we draw it?
No, Chair, I do not mind. You can proceed by asking someone else or in attendance.
You know, these things, sometimes we do them so lightly, and when there is a serious matter, they become an issue. Can we get another one? We will look at what Honorable Phillips is.
Thank you, Chair. I'll second the adoption of the list.
Okay. Any matters arising? In the absence, thank you very much, Honorable Members. Next week, Honorable Members, there are two issues. We're dealing with the international agreement that we said we need a briefing on, turning in, blah, blah, blah. Secondly, we might have to ask Honorable Mazoli, we look for her availability. We will then slot and when she is available. If she is next week, we will give that priority. Because we are told the legislation is the one that must be given high priority in our committee work. So we will get your correspondence at that time. Yes, Honorable Marshall, Chair.
On that note, I just want to plead with the committee secretary that because we are dealing with a bill that has been set stuck in MCOP, it means there was something. Can we be finished with that so that we know what would be the changes, what was it that was the bill before? I'm not sure whether I'm in the audit.
Honourable members, you will get a briefing next week. Usually, under normal circumstances, on the research side,
the board is supposed to prepare something to guide members on any of the matter. So can we just party to deal with those two items by next week? The only issue we'll consider at the game, whether Wednesday or Tuesday, but we'll deal with those two issues next week. Thank you very much. Go and enjoy your 1 hour before the house meeting.